I'm sorry, Mr. Simpkins. The answer is no. No, 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 no. Six down, four to go.
Right, I've got no time to argue. I tell you, it's got to be done tonight.
It must be a yes or no question, Inspector.
Do you understand? Tonight!
But they ain't big enough. You couldn't get half a dozen coats out of the old caboodle.
Coats? Dogskin? Coats? Then we'll settle for half a dozen. We can't wait. The police are everywhere. I want the job done tonight.
How are we going to do it?
Any way you like. Poison them, drown them, bash them in the head. You got any chloroform?
Not a drop.
And no ether. Either.
I don't care how you kill the little beast, but do it! And do it now!
Oh, please, miss, now have pity, will you? Can't we see the rest of the show first?
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and with me today is Trish Coughlin.
Hey, everybody.
And a very upset Stem Stepanenko.
I'm not that upset. Right? Fur is bad.
Yes.
Even animated fur?
Even animated fur.
Okay.
Well, I thought fur is good on the actual animal it's intended for. Yeah, let's put it that way.
Fur has its use.
I figured
really
it was mainly for me making you watch a Disney cartoon.
You know, I like Disney cartoons.
Yeah, they're generally good. Yeah. In this instance, 1,000 times better than the remake.
This is probably one of the more traumatizing Disney films, I think.
Yeah, you know what? Watching it, I'm like, holy shit, this thing's dark. Were all Disney movies this dark?
Yes, they were.
It's really dark. Like, you think about it on paper. This horrible woman wants to take puppies and make a coat out of them and doesn't care how you slaughter them. Like, oh my God, she's a sociopath and psychopath and serial killer in the making.
Yes.
Well, I mean, think of all the other ones. Like, Snow White, take a 14-year-old, 13-year-old girl and, like, cut out her heart.
Right.
They're
Bambi.
Yeah.
Mom dies. Lion King. But that was like at the hands of another animal. That's really a gray area.
Even Sleeping Beauty. Cinderella. I mean, she's abused by her stepmother.
Yeah. Sleeping Beauty was the film before 101 Dalmatians in 1959. It was actually a bit of a flop. Mm-hmm. And Disney was thinking about closing down the animation arm of the studio because they were refocusing on their live action family films that were doing well at the time. Herbie and whatnot.
Yeah.
This was kind of a test at this point. They weren't sure if they wanted to keep making cartoons. Thank God. Because 101 Dalmatians comes along in 1961 with a budget of $4 million. And I don't know if this is up to date with the re-releases and DVD and whatnot,
but it's
a worldwide gross of $224 million. Needless to say, the animation arm kept going for quite a while.
Oh, for sure.
Unfortunately, the traditional animated arm is pretty much toast and relegated to television and shorts.
And direct-to-video stuff sometimes,
It bothers me a lot because I'm a big fan of traditional animation.
There's something nice about it. I don't know. It's
just... Yeah, they did cut some corners on this to cut down their budget for what they were doing in their prior film of Sleeping Beauty. They went to this Xerox format for their backgrounds.
Okay.
Rather than a lot of paintings, so they do one and then just Xerox them in for the other scenes. And that is what came up with this scratchy look, which I kind of dig.
I was going to mention that because I really liked that.
And that would be the format for the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Walt hated it. He was angry about a lot of things.
I kind of the impression that Walt was kind of an angry man.
Yeah. He didn't have too much hands-on with this particular project because he was really confident about this script. He was not so confident about some of the design work that went into it, and I think it's some of the stronger ones.
It stands up. Like, I watch it and I'm going, wow, I mean, this is aged really, really well.
Stylistically, I really love the direction they took.
Yeah. Chuck Jones once said about 101 Dalmatians that he could have never made that film with the studio he was at the time because spots cost money. And only Disney could have made it at that time.
Oh, you're so right. So right.
Yeah. When you think about it, yeah, that's... to animate that on so many different animals and so many dogs.
And keep them unique, too, right?
Well, and have that design. You have to know which puppy you're painting.
Yeah. Well, lucky, yeah. If you paid close attention, his spots were in a horseshoe design, which is thus the name Lucky, outside of also being the runt of the litter that almost died. Yeah. To keep that uniform without those throughout those characters. I mean, there's only six puppies that really get identified in either film, and really, I don't know, in the remake there's one that really plays.
It's kind of well, that's the whole thing, but I mean, when you think about it,
there's two
well, from a like a narration point, I mean, you could do it maybe in a long-standing series like The Wire. You could have all the Dalmatians have their moments, because you could have that many characters.
Well, there was a animated series in the 90s which was quite wonderful. I wish Disney would release a lot of their 90s TV stuff, because on DVD or Blu-ray or whatever, because a lot of it was amazing and none of it you can see right now, except for probably on their channels.
They're probably saving that because they're doing their own streaming service.
Yeah. So I got to start watching all the shit they have on Netflix right now, because it's going away, folks. We have Moana here in Canada.
Moana.
I don't know about the other Netflix territories, but we've got it right now.
Nice.
Go watch it if you haven't seen it. It's really good.
And I think Canadian Flix will probably have it a little bit longer, because I expect that Disney service will start off in the U.S. They'll see how it does before they expand to other countries, just like Netflix did, right?
Yeah. No, I think that's what's going to happen. And we're going to see more and more of that. Like, Netflix has been really concentrating on their original programming as well, and Paramount is releasing their streaming thing surrounding their new Star Trek show. And we'll probably be reaching that out as well. And believe it or not, DC Comics has got their own streaming service coming.
Oh, wow. You might as well have cable at this point.
Yeah, you start adding it all up, and I'm like, oh man, the DC one's kind of cool. And then I thought about it, I'm like, oh, I think I own most of it, so it's a fine. Yeah. It's fine.
You're like, unless there's more new stuff coming out.
Yeah, but I mean, I had to think about it. I'm like, is there enough stuff? And then I started tolling up. I'm like, yeah, I guess there kind of is. You know, there's multiple Superman TV series and caboodles of cartoons.
Yeah, lots of them, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I said caboodles.
Hey, caboodles sounds right. I don't know. I thought that was the Latin plural of cartoons. A caboodle of cartoons.
It seemed appropriate.
You know, a murder of crows, a caboodle of cartoons.
I like it.
We like it. And Trish has coined a term. Actually, Jay's coined a term this time.
Yes.
But Trish has defined it.
Yes.
Thank
you for having my back.
I'm here for you, man.
Coming soon to a t-shirt near you. Caboodles.
Along with all the other t-shirts that we want to make. But
yeah, somebody's going to have to remind me of all the t-shirts we've come up with that we haven't made. So this is based on a novel by Dodie Smith, who really loved the film and thinks Disney improved it, so... good on Disney on this one for not pissing off the author.
Yes, because Disney's been known to do that.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
The story was by Bill Peet, who had also worked on Cinderella, Dumbo, and Sleeping Beauty, so he obviously made up for the Sleeping Beauty disaster, which is a good, I think, is... Mm-hmm. It may not have done well in 1959, but is now considered quite a classic. So, sometimes time is all it needs, right? Because I've always thought of Sleeping Beauty as one of their classics.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
So I was surprised to read that when researching this film that it was a bomb.
Well, when they're talking about like villains, one of the major villains I always think about is Maleficent, because she's so compelling. Like, I love her. I love that movie because of the villain.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much the only reason. The rest of it kind of unnerves me, but I love the villain.
Yes. And if our audience is wondering, I'm like, are we going to do that? Maybe down the road. I was thinking about this. We haven't done a cartoon to live action thing since How the Grinch Stole Christmas, which was a fun episode. Go check that out. And Disney's now in this big trend of doing that. And I've had a few people go, well, why aren't you starting with Beauty and the Beast? I'm like, well, this was really the first one they did. So let's start there. And
this was decades before.
Yeah. And honestly, 101 Dalmatians just has less music I have to sit through. I like musicals, but for some reason I never liked it in my cartoons.
Huh.
But yeah. You know what? I think about Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid and stuff. I love those movies. But yeah. Out of the stuff out of that 90s run, Aladdin's probably my favorite.
Yeah, like,
and there's still quite a bit of music in Aladdin. There's only two pieces in 101 Dalmatians.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
I was surprised. And he's a musician. This is the odd part, right? Of all the cartoons.
And they had to force that one into the movie.
Yes. That's what I couldn't wrap my head around. He's literally a musician, but every other movie, they work in, like, mills and other stuff, and they're just singing all the time.
Right?
It's true, so yeah.
So when you're a musician, you're not happy enough to be singing, apparently.
I guess.
Unless you really hate someone. Then you can come up with a hit.
Yeah. Although, yeah, her song wrote itself.
It does. It does. And it's an interesting counterpoint in the remake of this. 101 Dalmatians from 1961 was directed by three directors because it is animation, so mm-hmm. a lot more hands need to be involved. Clyde Geronimi, he worked on Cinderella, Alice in Wonderland, and Sleeping Beauty. Hamilton Lusk, who worked on Cinderella, Alice in Wonderland, and Pinocchio. And Wolfgang Reitherman, who worked on Robin Hood, The Aristocats, and Jungle Book. Jungle Book being one of my absolute favorites.
I love Robin Hood, too.
Yeah. Robin Hood's really good. His might be one of my favorites list. I saw Aristocrats is on Netflix right now, too, and I haven't seen that in a gazillion years. So
it's fun.
It's one of the lesser-known Disney ones. So.
It is. It's right there with The Rescuers. It was just one of those ones that's just never, when it was never shown on The Wonderful World of Disney, like you never got to see it. Right, and a lot of these, that was where I saw a lot of these older ones was on Wonderful World of Disney. You got, but once a year, you get lucky and find they'd play one of their classics.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I think one of my absolute, it might even be my absolute favorite of my childhood. I don't consider the '90s ones in that because I was in my teens at that point. As much as I adore them, but as in my childhood, Great Mouse Detective.
Oh yeah,
because I liked anything Sherlock.
Yeah.
That's really good.
And I don't think there were a lot of tunes in there. It's Vincent Price is the villain. Like, it is awesome.
See, that should be our remake, just leaving a modern Sherlock, but animated.
Yeah, well, they're out there. They're definitely out there. And we're going to talk also about the remake from 1996, the live-action remake by Stephen Herrick, who also directed Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, The Three Musketeers from 1993. His resume just keeps getting better and better. And Mr. Holland's Opus from 1995.
And then it goes downhill from
there. Yeah. The movie was budgeted at $75 million. It had an opening weekend of $45 million. And grossed, in just in the U.S. alone, 300, this is probably worldwide gross, actually, now that I'm looking at the number, but $304.2 million. So, didn't do too badly, despite mixed feelings. And maybe this is somewhat of a revelation as to why it is the way it is. The screenplay was written by John Hughes. Yes, that John Hughes. Ferris Bueller's Day Off, if you're still struggling, then if you are, please just leave now. Turn off the show. You don't belong.
Breakfast Club.
Oh, Breakfast Club.
Breakfast Club 16 Candles.
But Weird Science, which we covered in episode 83. Go check that one out. But what probably makes most sense to this film, Home Alone's 1, 2, and 3. He also wrote those. So I'll just let that sink in because we'll get there. I'll go back to the original here because I didn't get into the cast. It's all voice work, but voices, there's great voice actors and they need to be acknowledged. In the 1961, it starred Rod Taylor, Betty Lou Gerson. Interesting enough, Betty Lou Gerson was the nurse from The Fly.
Nice.
So go check out episode 101 because we talk about
Sweet.
It.
Sweet.
J. Pat O'Malley, Martha Wentworth, Ben Wright, Kate Bauer, and David Frankham, and a whole slew of other voice actors that probably nobody knows except for me in the room that thinks it's awesome. Well, most of these guys had regular acting gigs too. Mm-hmm. And we move into the 1996 version, and that starred Glenn Close as Cruella De Vil, Jeff Daniels as Roger, Jolie Richardson, who was Anita, Joan Plowright, who's awesome, by the way, as the nanny, Hugh Laurie as Jasper. Yes, House himself was Jasper. It was really cool. I'd forgotten he was in that movie. And it was really cool to see. Mark Williams, who was Horace, and everybody in our audience probably better knows him as Mr. Weasley from the Harry Potter franchise. John Shrapnel was Skinner. He was in Gladiator and Troy. And Tim McInerney was Alonzo, who actually was in Blackadder with Hugh Laurie.
Awesome. Oh, wait, yes, now I place him.
Hugh Fraser was Frederick. Fred Welker, I just want to mention, did some various voice work, who's also the voice of Megatron.
Nice.
Nice.
I did good on that one.
You did good. Really good.
Not too much stumbling. Well, I get excited when I talk about cartoons.
Oh, yeah. Apparently, yes. Oh, I knew this already. What am I talking about apparently? I knew this.
Yes, the largest section of my DVD and Blu-ray collection is actually animated, so...
You gotta love a cartoon. I don't know. I do. It just takes me back to my childhood.
I actually watch these movies in reverse. I usually like to start with the original and then end with the remake. I did it the other way around because I wanted to watch 101 Dalmatians on Saturday morning with my breakfast.
Oh, perfect.
Right?
What were you eating, though?
Oh, I had a good, would have had with my family when I was a kid. So, you know, hash browns and eggs and toast and... Yeah.
See, I would have gone with a sugary cereal just because
I just didn't have any.
Okay.
Ironically, Sam and I had a whole sugary cereal conversation yesterday.
Yes, we did, yeah.
You should have bought like the little thing you get with the many bit different tiny boxes.
I feel like I think I actually have one, but it's the one nobody eats and it's all bran.
Oh, God, yeah. That one.
And it's so old, it's like eating cardboard anyhow, so.
Yeah, I probably should just leave it as a memento of the past.
Okay, if it was Raisin Bran, I would have taken it because I do like.
Well, that's what I would do because I'm like, oh, it's left in that multi pack is the fucking all brand. Damn it. So I'd go grab a little pack because mom would always grab a multi pack of the little sun made raisins. So I would dump that in there and doctor it.
Yeah. You can't just have
just turn it into Raisin Bran. Yeah. Which I can stomach. I like Raisin Bran. Or I did as a kid anyway.
Oh, me too.
Because there were sweetenings in it.
Yes.
Yeah. Raisins.
That's right. I'm going to run the trailer for the original movie, and we'll come back and get into some dog stuff.
101 Dalmatians is here.
The puppies are here.
Puppies everywhere.
I know.
It's the classic story of a romance.
Oh!
I beg your pardon. I'm so sorry.
That led to a marriage. That led to...
15 puppies? Why, you old rascal.
That became a happy family.
Lucky, get down. We can't see. I'm hungry, Mother.
But someone evil wants those puppies.
Anita, darling.
Cruella de Vil.
Cruella de Vil. Cruella de Vil. If she doesn't scare you, no evil thing will. The world was such a wholesome place until Cruella, Cruella de Vil.
She's gonna make coats out of us.
I worship furs. Oh, the puppies, they're gone.
Now, the dog napping of the century.
A sound alert.
Has become an all-out Disney rescue mission.
Up the double nap.
Fire one! Fire two!
101 Dalmatians!
We gave him a slip! Didn't we, Dan?
Critics and audiences have made it one of Disney's all-time greatest classics.
The little darling.
Siskel and Ebert gave it two thumbs up, and Good Morning America called it wonderful. On a scale of 10, this film gets 101.
101!
All right, that was the, I don't know, I guess I think that was an 80s or 90s trailer for 101 Dalmatians. I did watch the original 1961, but it didn't lend itself too well to audio, so.
Yeah.
So I went with a later one, which is fine. Disney re-releases things all the time. Their trailers improve, so.
Yeah, well, you have those ads for the kids, like, going, a wonderful adventure. Like, you have that same voice. You know that guy's voice. He's the Disney guy.
Yeah, he's definitely the Disney guy. He was for... decades.
Yeah.
And he might still be, as far as I know. I have no idea.
I haven't caught any Disney trailers for a while.
No.
Videos or DVDs.
Can't say that I have either, seeing as I very rarely actually actively seek them out. And I mean, it's just, it's not that I don't like Disney movies or cartoons. It just, there's so much else out there for me to be watching. It just doesn't occur to me to go back and watch an older Disney film or, I love the 3D animation stuff, but I just don't enjoy it as much as I enjoy the original two-dimensional animation.
Mm-hmm. I just like seeing the art form
yes.
of it all. I think is more the case. Even things that look traditionally animated are still computer generated. They're usually just done as Flash.
Yes.
And I don't know. It does bug me that art form's gone now. And the last time we really got to see it in play was Princess and the Frog, and Disney was the best at it.
Yeah. And I don't know. Don Bluth
isn't doing it anymore. Nobody's doing it.
That's just sad.
It is.
The dying art form. But I like the opening of 101 Dalmatians, like that style of animating, like with the many things happening on the screen, kind of like Pink Panther, like this, and how they, with each of the credits, it was, the background was sort of reflective of what was happening there, like color design, they colored it in.
Yeah, there's a bit of Art Nouveau in that intro. Yeah.
I loved it.
I really dug that as well. I found it really interesting because watching it in reverse, they do fill in a lot of gaps and try to make more sense of Cruella de Vil's and Anita's relationship. Mm-hmm. When she shows up, she's already showing up ready for the puppies. We never see her before her charging in to see the puppies, and it's just mentioned offhandedly that her and Anita were old schoolmates.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell happened? She looks like 1,000 years older than Anita if they were schoolmates.
Yes.
No. Like, if they were schoolmates, either, something bad has happened, or Cruella de Vil is not, I don't know, mentally capable of going to school. Like, was held back 45 times.
She was the one cleaning the toilets?
Or, like, the only other way I could do it is if Cruella was teaching at the school.
It doesn't sound like she'd have the patience to be a teacher, so.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, but from what I've heard from teachers, they could go this insane after so many years of teaching.
Yeah, I would love to know what her backstory was, where she just, her fur obsession. Maybe she just, we never find out how she got all her money either, so.
No, she's wealthy for sure. I mean, they make that very clear.
They definitely make more sense of that in the live action one.
Yeah, like their why they would even interact is a mystery in the first film. In the second film, at least they've made a distinction as to why they would even interact.
Yeah, it looks to me that she's a fashion designer, runs a company of fashion designers, and has a big successful label.
Yeah, and it makes more sense why Anita would know her is if she works for her.
Yeah.
Plus, it also explains her fascination with fur.
Yeah, and if you've ever seen any interviews with some famous fashion guys and gals, they are very interesting people. Yeah. They tend to be very flamboyant.
Yes.
And unique individuals.
She's the anime version of The Devil Wears Prada, essentially.
It's funny. I was watching. I was thinking exactly that actually. When I was watching the remake, I'm like, this reminds me of Devil Wears Prada in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, it's Glenn Close. Yeah. So like Glenn Close, Meryl Streep. We're talking the same area of standards of acting.
Yeah.
I gotta say, Glenn Close brought it. Like,
oh, she totally did.
She was awesome.
She's my favorite part of that movie. Like out of everything. Like I greatly disliked the remake. But Glenn Close was in it. I could tolerate it.
I actually quite like the casting as a whole in that.
Oh, yeah. The casting was excellent. I felt that they were very true to the original with their choice of actors for their human characters, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think that part of it is now the human characters drive a lot of the story versus in the original, the story was told by Pongo, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's one of the things I did enjoy about the remake is the fact that it was not – there was no talking animals.
Yeah.
Right. See, and I like the talking
tons
animals.
Of personality. Though.
Yes.
Yeah. See, and I give me a talking animal rather than these garbage humans running a story with animals.
I don't know. I don't think the focus goes away from the animals too much. And like I said, I think the animals have a lot of personality. And this is, 96. None of this is CG'd. There's a few camera trickery things, but it's none of it's CG, and I think that's amazing in and of itself. That's another thing Disney was very good at through throughout the probably 60s up until that point in time, was really good about creating stories with actual animals and making it believable. And I thought that was pretty cool. Although the interesting, changing the cat to a dog, I think it's just because dogs take instructions more than cats. Yeah. Cats don't want to perform. They're just going to sit around. And
depends on the cat. The cat can do it. There's just limitations on what a cat's going to do for
you. Well, there's obviously limitations for dogs, too, because in the live action, they cast, well, they had 230 puppies to make up the 99, because I guess they just have shorter days than humans.
Well, and no, because if you have a certain period of time, they're not going to look like the same puppy.
Yeah. And with the adult Dalmatians, there's only two in the film, but there were 20 to make up those two through all those scenes.
Yeah, you're talking individual tricks that have to be done.
Yeah, because
they're very specialized.
Yeah. They are very specialized when it comes to trained animals.
Yeah. And yeah, that's a lot of dogs to be trained, especially with puppies, because they don't come trained. No. You know, you're just hoping they're not going to be peeing all over the place. But that was a good gag.
Yeah, that was a good gag. But, the thing is, the puppies just had to run. They just had to sort of make sure they ran in the right direction for the most part. All the puppies that had sort of like individual tricks, they were older puppies.
Yeah, right?
that were obviously at the point where they could be trained to do very specific things.
Yeah, right? Yeah. You're not going to have much happening when they don't even have their spots. They're going to be just a week old at the top. Yeah. So
yeah, I don't know. I absolutely hated this remake. Absolutely, I know why the dog was made. The cat was like. The cat was made into a dog. The cat had read the script and decided it wasn't good enough to be in.
Well, I'm assuming the Home Alone thing set off a few moments.
You know what? Here's the thing. I absolutely hated the movie up until the Home Alone moments.
Really?
I did not like anybody in it. I did
that
not like...
That stuff was really annoying me after a while.
I didn't like the humans at all.
They were definitely...
You weren't supposed to.
They were merging. Yeah, you weren't supposed to.
Yeah, but I don't want to even hear them talk. I don't want to look at them.
As far as the humans casted go, I'm like, that's fantastic. I thought the casting was great, and then I
have a quibble about the casting.
Honestly, the addition of, what's his name, John Shrapnel's Skinner, kind of bugged me, because that's bringing in even more darkness to this, and he didn't really wind up accomplishing a lot.
He was a total throwaway character.
And there's no version of that character in the original film. It's all down to the original two, which was Hugh Laurie's character of Jasper, and of course Mark Williams Horace.
See, and that's the weird thing. While watching this one, when I watched them in order, and I looked at the original Roger, and I'm like, you know who'd be great for this role? Hugh Laurie. And then I got to the remake, and it's Jeff Daniels, but Hugh Laurie's the bad guy, and I'm like, fuck this thing. I'm so fucking mad right now. Because even as a bad guy, I liked Hugh Laurie better than Jeff Daniels.
Well,
like, just the way the characters were written, like, they were garbage.
Because they were going with that Home Alone thing, and Jeff Daniels could do the pratfalls at the beginning, but in the end, the humans don't do a lot. At least the dog owners don't do a lot in the story. So if you're going to have somebody who's really capable of doing comedy and delivering good lines and being a somewhat likable bad guy, I mean, Hugh Laurie's got all of that.
That's probably why, because
even though Jeff Daniels might get top billing, I think Hugh Laurie might be the actual star of the film just under Glenn Close.
Yeah, and I generally liked him better than Roger.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there are certain points where you felt sorry for...
I liked everybody in that movie.
For Jasper and his partner, whose name I keep forgetting. But
Horace,
sorry. But yeah, he's... Because of all the bad things that happened to them. But they're reprehensible human beings. You're not supposed to like them, right?
Yeah. In fact, they're somewhat more... At least Horace is more likable in the remake. He's a little more devious in the cartoon, although I love that the fact that they keep playing him off as a dumb one, and he's always the one with the right idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, where did these puppies go when they're escaping?
They've disguised themselves.
I'm like, maybe they're using the ice to cover their tracks, because it won't leave prints. Mm-hmm. He's always right.
He's always right, yeah.
And Jasper's the one. They're dogs, you idiot. Of course they didn't do that. They can't think like that.
Exactly.
I do love when Cruella figures out that they have disguised themselves. She's like, impossible. Like, There's no way.
Yep. They're that smart.
Yeah.
But I do like the one thing I did like in the remake was a misdirect with the rabbits, where they follow rabbit tracks thinking they're following puppy tracks.
Yeah. Right.
I thought that was a really good.
Yeah. There's something I find really charming about the whole concept of the Twilight Bark that sets that all off.
Yes. Yeah.
Because, you know, you think when watching this and Cruella's going in to steal those puppies, and you're thinking, okay, Pongo and Perdita are going to be the big heroes of this movie, and they're going to go off and go on this great adventure and rescuing their children. But it's not them at all.
The community.
It's really the community of the animals. And that is also, I think, something that the remake sets up a little nicer. When they get to that wedding moment and you see all those dogs outside of the church along, because it's essentially a double wedding. The dogs are sitting outside seeing their friends get married, as well as Anita and Roger. And it's kind of charming. I kind of like it. And it does set up. It's still that anthropomorphic thing that might come from a Disney thing.
Yeah. Well, and they're just not setting it up even sooner, right? Because when Pongo and Roger are in the park, Pongo's talking to all the dogs that go past.
Right.
Right. Like, I really enjoyed that, actually, is the fact that they were already establishing the relationship that Pongo is well-liked in the dog community.
Yeah, they do that in the cartoon. They actually say, oh, you're the famous Pongo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they're obviously very well-liked. The animated Pongo, best wingman ever, by the way.
Oh, I love Pongo. But you know what? Here's the thing. What I liked about the original was they start off the voiceover, I'm living off Regent's Park with my pet. Pongo imagines Roger as his pet. Like, he's trying to do something for his pet Roger.
Yes.
Which I really do enjoy that idea, where the dogs have adopted these humans. It's not the other way around. They're the ones in charge, and they're like, oh, well, we got to give our human, I got to give my pet somebody to be with.
Yeah. It's pretty much established in both those films that Roger really can't get on without the dog.
Yeah,
the
I don't know.
The dog kind of keeps him on time and makes him breakfast. And
yeah.
There's some charming stuff in that, but it really is about, you know, the dog trying to better the humans. And they do the best they can without actually giving the dog dialogue in the remake, but it's pretty cool to actually hear it in the cartoon.
Yeah, like I love hearing it in the cartoon. I love anthropomorphized animals, but I just like, yeah, I would rather have a look who's talking now moment with those dogs, because I don't know. I think I was misunderstood before, where I know I hate the villains, but I hate the two protagonists. I do not like Anita, and I do not like Roger. Roger is kind of a sexist idiot, and Anita's a dumbass who just doesn't know any, but she's a sopping nothing I just hated them both so much at the beginning. I was like, fuck this movie 20 minutes in.
I just found that they were both unique individuals lost in their own little clouds, that the dogs kind of have to force them into these situations, and both of them get to go diving into the drink, the pond.
Yeah. See, and I think it's
handled better in the cartoon.
I think it's handled better in the cartoon. The truth is, I didn't really care about them. I gave two shits about them. I didn't hate them. I didn't like them. I was indifferent to them because they really don't add anything to the story aside from.
I didn't
Pongo
feel a connection to
meeting.
Them in either one of them. To be honest,
no, because they're not. They are a device. Yeah. They are not the primary characters, and there's no need to like them per se.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I just didn't, I couldn't wait to get past them because they didn't drive the story forward for me once they got married.
No.
No. And that whole let's get married thing, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah. I had a what the fuck moment there too. It's like, really? That quickly?
Well, but I mean, we don't know what that passage of time actually is.
Yeah, we do. We know
that was
the same
day.
They were getting married that day.
No, but they were getting dried at his house, and he says, will you marry me?
Yeah, they'd known each other for mere hours, and they're already going to get married. Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe they went to dive in the pond more than once.
Because at one point, Roger is sitting there complaining about the fact that she didn't let him give her mouth-to-mouth correctly, because that's supposed to be a joke somehow. Like, it irritated me. And then at the beginning, she's talking to Glenn Close, like, would you ever leave me? Well, I don't know. If we got married, my husband and I's plans had, our marriage had different plans. You're a fashion designer. You draw the drawings. You can do that from anywhere. You're saying that if some guy came along, and she's more successful than Roger is.
Well, I think
she's
at the end,
ultimately more successful. She should still be working.
I think at the end of the day, a lot of this is just simplified because keep in mind, this isn't for us. It's for kids.
It is for kids, right? But what is it teaching kids?
What, about marriage? They don't give a shit about it either. That's why they move past it.
No, they get right to it.
Just facilitate that and move on because it isn't about them.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, in the original, Pongo sets it all up through dialogue, and they don't have that device in the remake. Yeah. So they rushed it, and it didn't work for adults.
Oh,
but,
no.
Right? But
even though it takes actually longer.
But
in
you
the
don't
remake.
Even have yeah. to. Here's the deal. In the original, they both end up in the drink, and then they're laughing, ha, 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 and then you go to a wedding. So I put in my head a passage of time.
Yeah.
All so they had I. to do yeah. was have them put into the drink. They're like, oh, it's like, well, you know, you could stay here with my Dalmatian for a while. They don't have to have the will you marry me moment at all. That
yeah,
dialogue
I agree.
Could be fucking cut.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's what you need. But
it wouldn't feel
why?
As weird and creepy as it did.
It's
yeah.
garbage. Yeah. They should just have made it seem.
No.
Make
yeah.
more sense.
In my head. And maybe it's just because I did put that in my head that happened. Like, there was a passage of time. I didn't actually... Even now, I'm thinking, like, no, there was a passage of time. It didn't happen overnight, but... Yeah. Yeah.
And there was from their meeting to the wedding, but that moment where they decide they're going to get married is the same day they met.
Yeah.
Right? That's apparently, Trisha and I both have a beef about that, because it was really ham-fisted.
Two dogs sniffing their butts have more of a courtship.
I guess Anita just really liked macking on him while getting bad mouth-to-mouth.
Not even that, too. Here's the other bit.
Bitching about it. I don't get it.
Well, and the other bit about, too, she's like, oh, what a nice human. This guy came up, tried to steal your dog, yelled at you.
He's just dumb enough he can't tell Dalmatians apart.
Yeah, but then he was like a fucking asshole to you, and your first thought is like, what a nice guy. Anita has problems.
To be fair, she also carried literal bricks in her bag.
Which she needed for this asshole who's trying to take her fucking dog.
Well, he was distressed, and he did apologize.
Not really.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did.
It was ham-fisted. I'm kind of sorry. Sorry.
She must have watched a different movie than we did.
I think so.
Yeah. No, I watched that movie. I just heard it the way he fucking said it.
I think that's just Jeff Daniels in his delivery. But yeah. No.
See, that's the other problem.
I think he was actually apologetic.
Yeah. I think he was miscast.
I don't know. I think he's a fine Roger, but at the same time, he's not in it that much, so I don't worry about it that much. Now, to your point of why can't she work from home, I got an easy answer for that. It's Cruella de Vil. She is a micromanager.
Yeah.
Done. Because okay. Of course she is.
Yeah.
Well, Cruella de Vil has already told her that other fashion designers would like to poach her. Don't work for Cruella.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She is already going to be sought after.
Yeah.
Done. She still has a job.
Yeah. Well, if you don't dig your gig and you know other people are looking at you.
Exactly. Yeah.
She can probably
still
get more
work.
Money, too.
He's still trying to get a good game off the ground.
Oh, that was annoying.
Kid needs a punch in the face.
Wow, you had a lot of hate, Trish, today. Holy smokes.
Real anger for this movie.
Yeah, no kidding.
I despise this movie.
Apparently.
Yeah. Okay, a lot of hate for this movie. Here's the most hate I have. Cruella de Vil had the wrong target. She should have tried to made a coat of the people who wrote this fucking movie.
No, again, John Hughes.
Yeah.
I know.
But I forgive
maybe,
you.
I know. This is the part I'm having trouble with. John Hughes, you can do better. I'm so disappointed.
Oh, no, he can't.
No, not anymore.
No. He could have done better.
He could have done better. I expected more.
I mean, there's a lot of... this movie was longer than it needed to be. There's a lot. I mean, that whole scene with the kid playing during the video game and the whole setup of the you need a villain, a better villain.
Yeah.
A waste of time. Didn't need it, right? Well, I mean, I saw the ending coming at that moment. I'm like, oh, he's going to make a game with Cruella as the villain, right? Yeah. I mean, it was...
Well, why couldn't he still be a musician?
It's not any different than coming up with his hit song with Cruella as the theme of the song.
But it wasn't necessary either.
No, they were just kind of modernizing it for what kids can relate to in the 90s. I mean, that's a lot of passage of time, and kids were into video games.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, that actually was screenshots from a video game.
Yes.
The video game they did release.
That's the thing. It
so
seems like
it was
very,
marketing.
Yes.
That was me to like, it seemed shoehorned in.
Yeah.
And then I realized it was marketing once I saw the game.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ooh, cause like I think I might have enjoyed Roger a little bit better had he just been a composer or like did jingles for television or commercials. This would have made sense.
Maybe people I didn't have as big of a problem with it because I know game designers and sometimes it's kind of like that. Generally, you're not a team of one, but, you know, the Minecraft guy was before selling it off to Microsoft. So, honestly, it does happen. So,
well, I thought they didn't mention it in that he couldn't work well with others.
Yeah. So, it didn't seem that out of place.
Yeah. Me. I mean, they were clearly trying to establish that he was a creative personality.
Yeah.
And he you're right. He was kind of a solitary and didn't know how to take care of himself. They're trying to establish what was told to you in the first movie.
Yeah.
I just found that the whole... bit of dialogue about the villain could have been left out.
Oh yeah,
just it really did feel shoehorned and a really really blatant foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I mean even a 5-year-old who's watching this movie would have gone, oh, they're gonna make Cruella the villain. Yeah. right that's what bothered me more than anything else.
If you remove that dialogue, it
would plays really
be
well.
Better.
Yeah,
it would play better at that ending where you're like, oh, there we go. It really would have played better, I thought.
No, I totally agree. I mean, it was very much a duh kind of thing, but it wasn't all super important. He got his hit game by making Cruella the villain, and he got his hit song by making a theme song about Cruella.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the end, it accomplishes the same thing where he now has enough money to support a family of dogs.
A ton of dogs.
A Dalmatian plantation,
but I'm sitting there going like, okay, so like, are we spaying any of these dogs? Are we neutering?
No.
Are they doing what dogs usually do, which is breeding with the other puppies?
No, they make it clear that there's children and grandchildren and grandstepchildren. They say that at the end of the movie. Right, so they're allowing them to inbreed all they want.
Yes, see, yeah, you know what? Because here's in the animal kingdom, Lucky might have banged up one of his sisters. We're just going to put that out there. If this is for kids and they want to be true to it, then that's what's going to happen.
In general, is the
well, hey, hold on. I'm assuming the 15 puppies that are related didn't do anything with each other because there were a whole lot of other puppies that got rescued that got brought into this extended family that aren't related. So let's just stick with that mentality that there wasn't actually inbreeding happening. I'm going to just allow myself that.
Okay. We will let you have that veil in front of you.
And that's the one thing we do have to bear in mind while we're critiquing these is these are kids' movies, not movies for adults.
Yes.
So a lot of the flaws that we see with them are not going to be apparent to kids.
Yeah.
The one that the one about the video game, I do feel would have been apparent to just about anybody.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I don't think there was a 5-year-old that wouldn't have picked up on that.
But most of the stuff that we're complaining about would have just been fun for kids.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's what the intent of the movie was. And that's the problem with adults of any sort reviewing a kid's movie is we see things through adult eyes. We have great difficulty bringing ourselves back to when we were kids and going, would I have liked this as a kid? And as a kid, yes, I would have. I would have enjoyed this movie thoroughly as a child. Right? Probably until I was about 9 or 10 years old, I would have really enjoyed this.
See, I probably would have been that person who'd be like, get rid of the adults. When do we see the puppies? Like, that would be it. I would still be wanting to get past the adults.
Well, and that I'll agree with you on. And that's because they did stretch out that first third of the movie. The first act was really could have been about 15 minutes shorter.
Mm-hmm.
They really did stretch it out.
Well, yeah, I think part of it is because especially in 96, if you had a movie under an hour and a half, which... the original film's like 79 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
People see it as a bit of a problem, especially at that point. Movies were a lot more expensive than 1961.
Oh, yeah.
So you want to give people their value. I think I agree that maybe you could shave about 10 minutes off because it was an hour 40. Just bring it straight down to 90 minutes. I think that would have been perfect.
Yeah. Oh. And it all kind of come off that front end. The rest of the movie was a lot of fun.
I might have shaved a little bit of that Home Alone stuff. But again... by the time Home Alone came along, I was a little older, and the slapstick was getting tired to me.
Yeah.
At certain points, I'm like, okay, I've had enough of this. But again, I think kids would have liked it. Yeah. Maybe I enjoyed it more when I was younger as well. It's funny that, you know, as an adult, I'm viewing the remake a little harsher because I would have been an adult when I'd seen that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I have no problem with the cartoon at all because I can totally dive into my kid mentality when I'm watching it. I don't know. That's just maybe my
appreciation
of
any cartoons. But as a kid, also that you might have been tired of like sort of the slapstick, but I think kids would have enjoyed seeing these animals triumph over these adults.
Yeah.
And that's sort of part of what that charm was supposed to be about is these animals are winning.
And which I dig. I did like that. It changes a lot differently, especially in that climax with Jasper and Horace at that point, because there are things you can do in animation that you can't do with live animals and vice versa. In some respects, I think they did go further in the remake, which is a kind of a testament to what they were doing, because they were really getting a one up on both those guys.
Through
most, I would have liked to have seen more of that, actually. Maybe not quite so slapsticky, but a lot more of them outwitting.
Where the cartoon's a lot more subtle, where they're trying to trick and hide the puppies from them. They're literally kind of running them through traps.
Yeah.
They can't seem to figure out that Jasper and Horace keep getting caught into, usually of their own accord because they're just bumbling idiots. But
it still looks like Horace and Jasper probably would die, like in the two Home Alone guys. Remember when they were talking about how their injuries should probably kill them?
Yes.
These two should be dead.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, Scree Junkies, if you want to revive that bit, I always loved it. So go do 101
please.
Dalmatians and tell me what the actual body count would be. I would like to see that.
Yes.
Anybody hasn't seen those, go to Scree Junkies and watch their Home Alone thing. And they did one on, I think, Die Hard as well.
Yes.
And they were
so
great.
Good.
They were really great. I'm going to run the trailer for the remake and we're going to get back to this. Boy, we're all over the place, but we'll be back with more 101 Dalmatians.
I pronounce that they be man and wife. Amen.
They're here. The puppets are here.
Walt Disney Pictures presents 101 Dalmatians.
Your father, Pongo!
They were totally irresistible.
We must call this one lucky.
Unbelievably precious.
Dipstick.
And had a style all their own.
Wizard.
Which is all Cruella de Vil ever wanted.
I live for fur. I worship fur. Put them in a bag. I'll take them with me now.
The puppies are not for sale. Take it!
This Thanksgiving.
Just wait! Oh, you demon! Oh, my goodness!
It's all right, ladies. We're for president.
The battle is on.
Catch those puppies!
Walt Disney Pictures presents you.
Oi! Get out of my truck!
101 ways to ring in the holidays.
Whoops!
Glenn Close.
Good evening, madam.
Extend leg.
101 Dalmatians.
Hey, it was the same voice guy.
Yeah.
Apparently. Well, they only would have been about 15, 16 years apart, so why not, right?
Well, and given that first trailer probably was a re-release in the 90s with this film.
Well, you have these voice actors, and they go on for decades. Like, did you ever see, like, the Four Voices in a Limo short?
Nope.
Where it's all the guys in a world.
Oh yeah, I have seen that one.
They're all together?
That's great. No, I haven't seen that one, but the In a World guy, there's another one you can find, and they're like, no, In a World. No. In a place. No place. In a time. In a time. In a place, in a time. The director's just constantly arguing with them. It's great. Go find it. It's really funny.
Oh, I have to see that. I haven't seen that one.
We now know what we're doing after the podcast. For all going to YouTube and trying to find these clips.
Including my audience. But they probably have heard it already.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't mean they won't go back and listen again.
It's one, yeah. Just favorite it and put it in your YouTube queue.
In a world where laughter was king,
No in a world, Jack.
What do you mean, no in a world?
It's not that kind of movie.
Oh? Okay. In a land that...
No in a land either.
In a time...
I don't think so.
In a land before time.
It's about a comedian, Jack.
One man.
No.
When your life is no longer your own.
What does that mean?
When everything you know is wrong.
That's wrong.
In an outpost.
No.
On the edge of space.
Just space.
A girl.
No.
Two girls.
No.
Now.
No.
More than ever.
Stop it.
A renegade cop.
I hate you.
A robot renegade cop.
You're fired.
You're fired.
No, you're actually fired.
I'm fired.
Get out of the booth, Jack.
No. I like it in here.
So much fun. But when you hear that voice, you're like, oh, yeah.
Oh, now I want ringtones.
Yes.
Oh, I might have to make one. That would be good for my
If you could combine it with one, in a world. Trisha's got a phone call. In a world. Trisha's got a phone call.
I do have the technology to make that for you.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to bring this up, even though I brought this up while that trailer was playing. Glenn Close based her performance on Joanna Lumley, who played Patsy on Absolutely Fabulous, and she based it on that particular role.
Exactly.
And
it's super
you can
good.
See it.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. If you watched AbFab, you would recognize certain aspects of Cruella's personality.
Yeah,
in it for sure.
Yeah,
because I mean, I haven't seen Ab Fab in a long time, but I remember when it first started airing, it was first available to Jay and I. We watched like every episode we could find.
Oh yeah,
they played it on CBC for.
No, well, that's
a long
how
time.
We watched yeah. it. That's how we were watching it. We were roommates at the time, yeah. and we were like, "Oh, they got like an Ab Fab marathon going on. Let's watch
so
it."
Good.
It was funny because Jay and I be sitting in his room watching it on his little itty bitty TV because
yeah.
Rob and Mike were like, "Oh. God, I can't believe you guys are watching this stuff."
But it's so good. Like, can you imagine like Cruella De Vil and Safi going at it together? That would be amazing.
It would have been way too much fun.
Well, I want to talk a little bit more about Cruella, but first I want to bring up Joan Plowright. Like, somebody took that cartoon version and just turned her into a human being.
Yes.
Exactly. The only thing I can think is like cloning a cartoon character is all you could do. She's just she is a delight, an absolute delight.
Yeah,
you just want to hug her.
Yeah, yeah.
Cuddle her so much.
She looks like she smelled like fresh baked bread.
Yeah. I mean, when I think about the casting, there's a lot of it's dead on. I think Jeff Daniels is probably the weakest of the bunch, but everybody else kind of looks like their cartoon.
Exactly. Yeah, Horace. Yeah. I'm like. Awesome. He looks like almost like exactly like the right. cartoon Horace,
really
right? Except
good.
For the nose. I mean, because those over exaggerated cartoon noses are almost impossible to
yeah, of course.
Cast. But as far as like body type and the lack of chin and like, and you could tell the actor playing Horace was kind of pulling his chin back to try and emulate that look. And that's what I really enjoyed about him was he was trying so hard to be Horace.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Right? And that's why he's probably still a working actor is because he puts that kind of love into even really crappy mm-hmm. roles like this.
Yeah, and I mean, he knew he was doing a cartoon.
Yeah.
He's aware of it.
You know, despite all the changes, they do go out of the way to give you some of the most iconic bits. You know, the big car of Cruella. Yeah. Although it has way more life in the animated one.
It does.
The horrible truck that Horace and Jasper drive.
Yeah, that's there. I mean, Cruella's laugh, especially that iconic scene of her bending over and laughing.
That was wonderful seeing that.
Beautifully done. Beautifully done. So there are some amazing nods to the cartoon and even some dialogue is just pulled straight whole cloth, especially the kill the puppies line, which, you know, what a horrible human being every time I think about it.
I don't care what you do. Was it bash them or like...
Bash them, got chloroform.
Like chloroform. I don't care how you do it. But thinking about that, what she was talking about, this was the dark, this is dark Trish coming out. When I kept thinking about, like, bash them, like, you get blood on the pelt, you're kind of going to wreck your coat.
They can clean it.
It's pretty terrible.
It is pretty terrible, but she really wanted that coat.
She really wanted that coat.
She fell in love with that design right away. You know, when Anita makes that design and she sees it based on her dog, which does prompt her to come and visit, and you're like, oh, you have puppies, and just hating the human beings, and like, oh, yeah. I love it when she is there the moment the puppies are born. Wait, they have no spots, they're useless.
Yeah, the rats, she said they're little white
rodents.
Rats.
Yeah,
it's a hard movie to watch because it I mean, Disney movies always have an undertone of darkness to them.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
me, for the most part, this one went into dark places that surprised me, actually.
Well, you, when you think of it with an adult eyes, yeah. and stuff, I'm like, oh my god, like, this is what a horrible human being.
There's a point where she's talking to Skinner on the phone, and he doesn't speak.
Yeah,
but what he's doing is Morse code on the speaking part of the phone. With a scalpel.
Yeah.
That was like, this is chilling.
Yeah, it was actually quite disturbing. Like if you saw it like in a horror movie or an action movie, your skin would crawl.
Yeah,
like,
well,
and it kind of did when I was watching it.
We see his kind of workshop as he's already working on another pelt. And she sent a Siberian tiger from him. It's like, oh, God.
Yeah. Well, they talk about that news report and they talk about that was skinned and left, the skin body was left there. And I'm like, right then I'm like, wow, this is really dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. They left its mutilated carcass. Yeah. This is the line in a children's movie. Somebody says mutilated carcass. That just tells you something.
At least they didn't show it, but yes.
Yeah. Mommy, what's a mutilated carcass?
Yeah, and there's the one when Cruella is stabbing the pitchfork into the pile of hay. Oh. She's talking about how she says it's okay. It'll just be some buttonholes, and I'm like, oh, that was. I'm like, they at least address the fact that she'd be like damaging the fur, but oh,
I know.
God,
and I mean, that's why you don't feel bad when she gets abused by these animals.
No,
and,
yeah,
and you actually want to see more.
She essentially gets tarred and feathered with molasses. And,
oh, I love the escalation of that. Like that molasses. I'm like, and you know, molasses is thick. So can you imagine being covered in that, having it soaked through? She's wearing heavy fur clothes, so she's probably wearing about 50 pounds worth of weight.
Yeah, right.
As she's walking around. Yeah. And then goes into like pig mud and carrying that.
Yeah. And I couldn't think of anything more fitting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, aside from having her skin made into a coat, but.
Yeah.
But.
You know, and maybe the movie actually, the remake does that a little bit better. Just you get to humiliate her over and over and over again. I do like how that ends rather than her own henchman crashing into her car.
Yeah, she just ends up in the ditch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing really happens to her.
No, I love the skunk bit too, which was set up beautifully. It was set up so far in advance, you'll forget about it. Like, I actually did forget about the skunk until they showed it on her lap in the back of the paddy wagon.
Ooh, yeah.
I have a question for you. Okay, you know the end of Hot Fuzz with the goose? And how that comes back at the end? Do you think the skunk would like them? Like, oh, that skunk egg is good. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, the skunk was obviously following her around because it was in her own vehicle at one point.
It was.
And followed him into the paddy wagon.
It's a cold.
Well, no, she picked. Yeah. I don't know if she followed her in, but it was her stole, right? Like it was her. Like, she was using it to warm her hands. It was sitting on her passenger seat, and the skunk crawled in. And
she didn't notice.
She didn't notice.
Out, and so she just took out the other bit.
Yeah. I obviously turned my head a little bit on that scene because it didn't quite click in my brain.
I do have to say, in both movies, I want Cruella De Vil's car because that's basically an all-terrain vehicle. That really does go through a lot of stuff. Yeah.
I love it in the animated one where she tells the henchman, and drive carefully because there are police everywhere.
Yeah.
And the way she drives.
Oh my God.
She's a lunatic.
That was one thing I kind of missed from the remake was that car chase scene.
Yeah.
Like just the craziness of it, like, because it was insane. And I actually, for some reason, as I was watching it, I'm like, after it was over, I'm like, where was the car chase scene? And I think that actually does happen in the sequel, 102 Dalmatians.
Okay.
I think that they kind of bring that car chase scene in, because for some reason, in the back of my mind, I know I've seen a live action version of the 101's animated.
I wish I would have spent a little bit more money and extended the nose on that car. Because as much as I liked the car, it just didn't quite feel right. It didn't have
you
that.
You needed it a little bit longer, but it's sort of
exaggeration.
Do it.
Well, I mean, they've made Batmobiles from scratch, true. So it's not it might not be super drivable, but you know, the Batmobile wasn't for the most part either.
And just to have a have a bit of a crossover, she's at an intersection, and then Dom from Fast and the Furious pulls up on her and revs his engine.
Somebody edited me that together.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Oh, I love where we go with some of these podcasts. It's awesome.
So much fun.
Yeah, why has Disney not done a Wacky Racers kind of thing?
Oh, it would be great.
Well, they haven't in recent memory. They did a few in the late mid to late 70s, if I remember correctly. I mean, the Herbie movies and...
Do it with Mario Kart kind of game.
Yeah.
Their Disney characters.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
She'd be perfect for that. She comes with her own vehicle.
So. Yeah.
There we go.
And then you've got Herbie and... There's some other car. Yeah. I know there's other like iconic cars in some of these.
Sure.
Movies.
Well, and then you got the Model T that Mickey drives from back in Steamboat Willie.
Sure.
So there's lots they could do there.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of. There's got to be like a few more. I'm thinking of like this weird jalopy that I've seen in a couple of cartoons.
I think
too.
Goofy had one.
Yeah, Goofy had one.
Goofy had one, there's the. You can take the one because she left the one. She left the fox. In the middle of nowhere, and the fox and the hound, whatever that person was driving.
Hey, I didn't catch it, but I was reading. There are a lot of dog cameos in the animated from some of their other films.
Mm-hmm.
I think Fox and the Hound was after this, but
yes, it was.
It was way after this. But Lady and the Tramp, were in there.
They were in the window of the pet store.
Yeah, and some of the other dogs from that movie were also in there as well.
Yeah, I think the bulldog.
Yeah, he was in the pet store. Yeah. And I think Lady and the Tramp were in there briefly during the Twilight Bark.
Nice.
But I didn't catch it. I had to read about it. So a lot of little nods in there, which are in there. You got to be really quick to see, I guess. And with, you know, as an adult, I'm not catching it. I'm not making those connections because I haven't seen those movies since I was a kid.
Well, in some cases, like there's some there that I still haven't seen because I was... At the Disney watching age, like that key Disney watching age, when they were either in the theaters or on video. By the time home video came around, I was too old to want to go back and see all these great Disney films that I hadn't seen yet.
Yeah.
Right? Like The Rescuers, Lady and the Tramp. This, 101 Dalmatians. This was actually my first time seeing it in its entirety.
Right.
Because I was in that generation that didn't get to see them when they're in the theaters or... On VHS.
Right.
Yeah.
When they're in those big jewel cases.
Yeah.
I remember those.
Mm-hmm.
You could always tell that's what the one part of the shelf that were Disney movies. They were giant.
Yes. They always had the supersized packaging.
There was something to make them distinctive and to a certain extent collectible because they are still collectible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, those limited time releases too. That Disney continues to do the timed releases and it's like once a decade.
Well, I remember those ads. They're like, we're opening the Disney vault.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're releasing this for a limited time.
Yeah.
And once all the copies are gone, it's gone.
Yeah. Right?
For another 10 years or whatever it was that they sort of designated as their release periods. But
yeah, that's how I actually saw most of these were video releases.
Yeah.
Because... You know, for the most part, my movie going time was in the 80s. So, and even then, those movies are so short, I couldn't justify it. I'd rather go to a longer science fiction movie or something.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Something a little bit that you're like, we're paying this much money.
I think mainly because my parents, they wanted to watch something they can enjoy too.
Yeah.
So I never actually got to go to cartoons in the theater. So there's a lot of like that CBC World of Disney. That's where I saw a lot of it before the home video stuff kicked in.
Yeah, but a lot of these iconic ones that sort of do come out of the vault, they didn't air. Like they're big animated feature films. Like you were lucky if you got one a year on The Wonderful World of Disney. At least during my
time. All of the really hard ones to get your hands on because they never aired it on the World of Disney. And geez, I think it only had maybe one or two home video releases. Between VHS, I don't even know if it's been on DVD or Blu-ray, is Black Cauldron.
Yeah.
And I saw that in the theater. That one I did see in the theater.
and that one, like, that's sort of, because of that, it sort of got this semi-cult status because people love it, but it's just not...
Yeah, well, it's not one of their better ones, and it certainly was actually a pretty big bomb, but actually it's probably had more releases than that Roseanne Barr one that pretty much killed the animation division. was a whole farm. I don't even remember the name of it, so sorry.
So anybody listening, if you can remember, let us know.
What was essentially it about? Like,
I didn't see it. But I know that was in it, and it was Barnyard Animals or some sort, but that was a huge flop, and that pretty much killed. And hopefully I got that right, because I'm pretty sure that was a Disney thing. And then that's when they moved into full CG for quite some time.
Yeah. Something with cows? No.
I don't remember.
I don't remember. Yeah, I mean, after Mulan, and The Lion King was kind of the last where I was like really aware of what was going on with Disney movies. Mm-hmm. And that's around the time when we started to see more of that computer generated rather than cell animation. Right?
Yeah, so. Yeah. Once they moved into the 90s, that's, I think, the style that we have here in 101, that begins in 101 Dalmatians, goes for next roughly 20 years or so into the 80s until CG enhancements start kicking in. So I imagine Little Mermaid probably was the first one to move it into something else.
Yeah.
Style-wise.
Yeah, because it definitely has a different feel than this movie.
Yeah, because at that point you can still quickly make your backgrounds. Either that, or they moved back into the fully painted backgrounds until the CG kicked in. By the 90s, you had those intricate computer-generated backgrounds in Beauty and the Beast and stuff. So,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
When they had all the backers, they could reuse them for their straight to DVD releases that we were doing.
Yeah,
well,
now the CG's gone so far, like, well, let's just do live action versions of our animated films with a whole bunch of CG. So essentially, it's still an animated film with a couple of people in it. I'm a little baffled by it, and that's why I kind of wanted to do this one, because it was still before.
Still puppies.
And CG was too expensive, so they were. And I was really charmed by things like Homeward Bound and whatnot.
Oh, Milo and Otis.
Yeah, Milo and Otis, and there's something about that. And if you can get an animal to emote,
was Benji Disney?
I don't think so. You know what? I don't know. I think maybe it was. Now that I'm thinking about it,
because Benji had quite a few adventures.
I don't know. I mean, Disney. That was maybe ABC. Well, yeah, it might have been Disney.
There
I don't
a whole
know.
Series of them. There was more than one. Too.
Oh yeah, there was TV series and a bunch of slew of TV movies. And Benji was a big deal at the time. This tiny little ankle biter got into adventures.
Yeah, no, the Shaggy Dog was definitely Disney.
Shaggy D.A.
Shaggy
D.A. Oh, I love the Shaggy D.A.
Yeah,
that was so good. The Shaggy Dog,
a lawyer that turns into a Shaggy Dog.
Yeah. And then we had our own Canadian
insanity. It, like, you think about it, that's insanity.
It's great. But like it's the ultimate like best werewolf scenario.
Right.
You're not really out of control werewolf. You're a nice shaggy dog. I mean, why not?
It's fine. They had two or three, and I think they remade it.
We did remake it, yes, with Tim Allen.
That's right. And we might cover that on the show at some point.
Yep.
As long as the Tim Allen version wasn't direct to television.
Yes, it violates the TV rule.
No, I think it was actually a release. I'm almost positive. But we'll check on that. It'll be
fine. Herbie, and, well, we'll cover some more Disney down the road.
Yeah, we haven't done a lot of those.
And we got into a fairly sci-fi horror thing there during our anniversary, so we're going to bring some fun stuff for the next little bit, just to change the tone a little bit, lighten things up.
Some mad capillarity.
Yeah, we'll have some fun.
Yeah, no. And then we had our own Canadian version of, like, The Dog That Got Into Adventures.
Oh, Littlest Hobo.
Yeah.
Littlest Hobo.
Best episode of Cornered Gas ever.
Oh, completely. Loved it.
Sorry, never seen it.
I wanted to talk about Nanny for one second, because we talked about Joan Plowright and how she looks like she smells like bread and you want to hire. But my question is, how the fuck could they afford her after she lost her job and he had no income?
That's what I couldn't figure out.
Well, I assumed she was on maternity leave, but I guess she hadn't had her kid yet.
No, because she got fired by
because
Cruella.
She got married.
Not because she got married, because she refused to give up the puppies.
Oh, yes. By that point. Well, I guess the nanny was still there at that point.
Yeah.
Oh. That's a loophole.
And here's
but that's
other
not
thing
something
too.
Kids are supposed to notice.
Yeah.
And what always kind of boggled me about the two movies is in the original and the cartoon, they don't have any children. In the remake, they have not yet had a child, and they have a nanny?
You know what? I bet you this nanny was Anita's nanny from when she was a kid.
Mm, maybe that's why she's still there.
And
then.
I think she's got money. I think Anita's got money.
Maybe that's the only reason.
They do hint at that in the the animated film.
Yeah,
I
do too. That's right.
But what's amazing when we look at this, the old movie, they talk about like their little house in London. I'm like, they've got a house in London. And Cruella's like mocking them for this. I'm like, going, it's a house in London. It's an expensive house.
Yeah.
And then in this other movie, they're in a they can afford a place in London. They must have some sort of money.
Yeah. No, I think most of it's probably Anita, and it's probably Roger that makes them live a little more modestly, because he doesn't have money.
Yeah.
No, because like she has a pretty sizable apartment. Yeah, at the beginning
at least
of the film.
As a fashion designer in the remake, you know, especially one that they've established is sought after. I don't think she was hurting.
No.
But I don't even know what she did in the animated film.
They didn't really say.
No, she was an artist of some sort.
Which I thought was really weird. In the original one, they have the kind of odd-looking artist chick and her Afghan hound at the beginning. And I'm like going, and then Pongo.
All the animals that look like their owners, look like the animals.
And then Pongo just kind of goes, oh, no. And I'm like going, no, wait a second. She's an artist and he's a composer. It seems kind of like a match to me.
I love when he sees like the poodle and the rich lady and he's like, ooh, oh, wait. Out of his league.
Yeah.
Let's get real here.
But I love how he says he doesn't know, he can't determine human attractiveness, so he has to go by the dog.
Yeah, no, it's really, really well done as far as the way he chooses the potential mate for Roger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's sort of funny, we mock the thing where like people look like their dogs, but have you ever been outside and you've literally seen this thing happen? You look at somebody walking a dog and you're like, yeah, that makes sense. This person looks like their dog.
Yeah.
It's a delight when you catch it.
Yes, yeah, it really is. Yeah.
It's like there's a glitch in the Matrix and you're the only one who's noticed.
Yeah, it's true. Actually, my dog even looks a little bit like me because she's getting the gray chin and stuff just like I have, right? I'll go with that. I'm gonna fess up and say I look like my dog.
Nice. I think it just happens. I have to say, growing up as a kid, I probably looked like a couple of our dogs. I don't know.
Well, I never owned the dog per se, so all the dogs that came up in my family were my mom's dogs. So. And liked tiny small dogs, poodles, and my mom is a tiny person.
Yeah, she's a tiny person with curly hair.
With curly hair, yeah. She liked her perm. Oh my god.
It's a real thing.
I'm so glad my mom doesn't listen to my podcast. She doesn't. Just trying to explain what a podcast is to her.
If she starts, have her start after this one.
Right.
We're not making fun of her. We're just making an observation.
Huh.
Yeah.
I love Jay's mom.
I love my mom,
too.
To
me, it's like a beautiful thing. Like, you're that close to your dog. You're like, this is my canine soulmate because we have so much in common. That's what I kind of like about it. That's what I think.
Right.
It's a beautiful thing.
And there we go.
There we go. I guess we should probably address the whole Home Alone thing.
Yeah. I did write down Home Alone with Animals.
Yes,
yeah.
And it was. But it was, that was popular at the time. It
was.
What appealed
that
to
was
kids,
trendy
right?
At the
it
time.
It was trendy.
Those movies were hugely successful.
Yeah, and it gave them a way to address the outsmarting of our bad guys without dialogue,
mm-hmm.
right? And so mm-hmm. by tricking them into hurting themselves worked really well, right? So it was a very good device for that, I thought.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed seeing these guys get punished a little bit.
I did too, but they were probably, in my mind, the worst aspects of the
film.
But
then that's my follow-up question. This is what I'm wondering. If we lived in a universe where there was no Home Alone, where it's a child doing this, and then you have these films where animals are doing this, do you think it would be such like a contrite like kind of device? Do you think it would have been more popular, less popular? Because you're saying it does cause the ability to kind of like narratively show that these animals are beating them without any dialogue.
I think, at least in this movie, the animals are less intent on killing anybody than that child is.
But to answer your question, I think it would have been more successful if we didn't have the pre-existence of the Home Alone type movies. Yes.
Yes. No, I think it probably would have been a very different movie if Home Alone hadn't existed prior to it.
There, yeah, and there might have been more movies kind of like this. Like, there would have been more kind of animal-led movies because they would have just figured out this is the best way to drive the
given,
story.
Given how much direction and they have the dogs to do, they could have just done a straight-up adaptation of that animated film, having them rolling in the soot and jumping in the back of a truck. They could have done all of that. It's actually, none of that was unachievable.
Yeah,
as a live action, so they made a conscious choice to do something different there.
Yeah. I would have liked to see them, like, just the little puppies just like, okay, getting all messy, because I bet you they would have loved it.
Oh, it would have been so cute.
Yes.
A dirty puppy just being like, oh, I get to be dirty now? Yeah. Because that's what dogs love to roll and stuff, where you're like, oh, God, why are you rolling in it? But they think it's delightful.
Yeah, well, I was over at Sam's yesterday, and his dog was just rolling around in the grass.
Yep.
Yeah,
she loves it.
Yeah.
Oh, and I have a question. How do you think Cruella got out from under that big pig?
I don't know. I'm guessing the pig just got tired of sitting on her.
Yeah, because I'm like going, there's no way she'd get up. That's a sow.
Yeah. You're looking at probably 2,000 pounds worth of pig.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Cruella's hips should have been shattered.
Yep.
Yeah, you're right.
So, Screen Junkies, we need to add that. To how she should have died.
Yeah, somebody get a hold of that doctor and tell me what the injuries are. Broken actually, hip.
The only other thing I did want to bring up is I love the bit where she sees the tracks go into the sheep enclosure.
Yes.
And she's like, ah, and then the dog's kind of giving her a little growl like, yeah, bitch. And then the sheep get up and all the puppies are underneath. And I'm like,
that was really clever. And again, that's something that they came up whole cloth that wasn't in the animated film. Yeah. And like, they come up with these beautiful pieces for the remake, and they seem more cartoony than the cartoon did.
Yes. Yeah. And again, I just think it was a beautiful way of showing that in the intelligence of these animals without having voiceover or talking animals. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the talking animal film, unless it's a cartoon.
Yeah, the cartoon bit, I thought, I can get into that.
Yeah, I have a little tougher time having some internal voices in a live action thing, but as a cartoon, it's not a problem. And they did a great job in giving these animals personalities in this movie without giving them an internal dialogue. Because you're not going to be able to have them talk and mesh up the sounds, at least not in 96. And I mean, you could just CGI the whole thing now.
I guess what they used to do is it would just be sort of, they'd have the animal kind of standing there and
have them chew peanut butter.
Well, no, but not even moving their mouth. It would be like they're talking.
Yeah,
like it was the internal monologue. Yeah. Really.
Yeah
And I think they made the right call to not do any of that.
I do too.
One thing I missed is one thing that was a big change was when Lucky gets left behind.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because they changed that quite a bit, because Lucky did get left behind because he was watching TV, but they went back and got him.
He was just fell asleep and missed the escape.
Yes, right. And that's where they kind of added in something extra for Skinner to do, I guess.
Right.
And to show how lucky really is.
Yeah. Oh, I know, because that's harrowing to watch this poor dog, and you're like, oh my God, you think it's all going to go terribly bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know it's not. As an adult, you know that it's not. But as a child, I could see that being like quite frightening, right? Is oh no, Lucky, right? What's going to happen to Lucky? Right? Especially when you see Skinner walk in the door and the abject look of terror of Lucky's face. Yeah. Right? I mean, and it was. He did look terrified. Mm-hmm. That dog was really good at looking scared.
Apparently, when in the remake, when Cruella de Vil, when the dogs first saw Glenn Close, there was one dog, and I think it was the one that did the rescue stuff, actually cringed and backed away from her.
Oh my God.
So that crazy hair, and I'm like, excellent. The dogs are already afraid of Cruella de Vil in real life. That is amazing.
That is amazing.
That says a lot to acting. It really does.
Yeah. So whatever was going on there, maybe she's method. I don't even want to know how she got method on that.
Yeah. No.
Let's not delve too deep into that.
I don't think Glenn Close has that in her at all.
No.
But I think she could channel that. Like, she channeled a lot of evil. I think she could channel that evilness, and then a puppy would be like, something very wrong with that person.
This is toning it down. She boiled a rabbit in Fatal Attraction, so this is just a step back.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
More animals made it out of this film than Fatal Attraction.
Yeah, so yeah, this was a step back. So nothing to worry about here. Nothing to see here, folks. Nothing to see here.
That's right.
But I have to say, at the end, when like Horace and Jasper, when they were like, the cops come, they're like, huh, we're rescued. And then they get put in the back of the police van. They're like, so much better now.
We're warm.
There's no animals here.
I liked how he froze for a moment there.
That was awesome. Yeah, there
wow.
was
yeah.
That creeped me out. That was so weird.
I'm like, well, he's dead. My adult brain was going, he's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, realistically, he probably would have been. Yeah. Again, back to the Screen Junkies thing, because, it was a long fall, freezing cold water.
Yeah. Right?
So, I mean, he would have to get inside pretty fast before he started getting hypothermic.
Yeah.
Although, if you go back to the cartoon where Pongo and Perdita are going into that very icy river and they're swimming across and that sort of cuts away, they apparently don't go across, but I'm like going, two Dalmatians in like sub-freezing water going along there, they might be very ill dogs at the end of that.
Oh, and you can see how the cold was affecting them after the march after quite some time there in the cartoon. In some ways, that cartoon is way more realistic than this remake was.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, because they would have been cold and their feet would have been cold and they would have been tired and hungry. All of those things, and they addressed all of them, which I thought was actually really wonderful.
Yeah.
With Lucky's like, I'm frozen, my tail's
and
frozen.
And fresh milk straight from the cow.
Yeah. The little cows are like, shh, be quiet, let them sleep. It's like, I like the cows.
Yeah, they were good.
Yeah. And I like that they had all those characters in there, and you could kind of see those characters in the real-life animals. Like
The barnyard was still there. You still had the cows, and you still had the horse. And the horse still does the kick thing, so... You know, that's all kind of there.
Another thing, getting kicked by Clydesdale.
Oh, Jesus.
That's bad.
Well, they didn't actually get kicked directly by the Clydesdale. The Clydesdale hits the boards and the boards shoot up, right?
Oh, no. She's going up to that window at the beginning when she's just coming up to the barn.
And he kicks the doors. Yeah,
that's right.
And he kicks the doors. So he's slammed a lot of wood in Glenn Close's face.
Oh, yeah.
So that's bad.
Yeah, she wouldn't have a face after that, I don't think.
No, Clydesdale?
Yeah, it would have been spread out across between 2 years. It just would have been a...
Yeah.
Oh, and then they did have, like, the shaggy dog kind of as the colonel. Mm-hmm. But what I really enjoyed about, like, the old animated one is the way they had his paws and, like, the physical... You could tell it was an elderly dog.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just in the animation, which I thought was really amazing.
In 1961.
Well, Disney was very famous about bringing in animals for their artists to study when they were doing their designs. I mean... Some of this, I'm imagining that a lot of this, especially with the car scenes, were rotoscopes of some sort.
Well, especially when she goes down into the ravine.
Yeah, I was reading that they were filming and had painted these cars all white with the black outlines on the cars. And that's how they would animate over top of this something that they already shot. Yeah. I mean, man, it really pays off. If they're doing kind of some their own version of rotoscoping, I mean, they were obviously the best at it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, for the longest time, Disney was the best at anything animation.
Yeah.
I mean, that's bottom line. There were no studios doing what Disney was doing.
Yeah. I don't think anybody'd even argue with that now, even the fact that they're all CG now. But I would love to see them go back and do a traditional animation. Every now and again, they'll do one, and you'll get a surprise hit, like something like Lilo and Stitch comes out of nowhere during a time where they pretty much abandoned animation, and it was just good enough. I think it was probably intended for as a home release, and it was just good. They thought it was good enough to release theatrically.
Yeah, and then it just hit a note. People just really, really liked it.
Yeah, so... Maybe we'll get to see it again. Hopefully somebody at Disney's listening.
Well, with a lot of these movies, a lot of the stuff with the characters in their movies, is the voice actors, as they got to use more famous people, that person's sort of face became part of that character.
Like, oh,
when you
sure.
think of the genie, you think of Hades and Hercules, you think of all these other people. Like even way back when with the Evil Queen, they were using the person doing the voice as sort of a model to create what
they were creating. They were using, certainly their actors were inspirations for certain characters. I do believe Lisa Davis was a model for several characters, and I think Sleeping Beauty as well as Anita. And you can kind of see those similarities just in the designs of those characters. So I think she was the model of quite a few. But yeah, Disney does like to do that. So like you said, James Woods there.
Yep.
Was for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's for sure the inspiration for Hades, yeah.
And then even though she didn't do the voice, Alyssa Milano for Ariel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Famously, she was the inspiration. Yeah.
Which is good, yeah. I think that's great. If you can put a real-life face to it, and maybe that's why these things translate so well into live action, is because you can already put an actual face to those characters, mm-hmm. which is pretty neat.
Yeah, like that. When I look at Glenn Close and think about animated Cruella de Vil, like sure, Cruella de Vil has like those very sharp cheekbones, but I kind of see Glenn Close.
Yeah, yeah. No, she was excellent casting. And I mean, Jay and I were talking about Glenn Close and my inexplicable dislike for her. I don't for her and Michael Douglas, and I figured out it's Fatal Attraction is the common denominator.
Okay,
something,
there we go.
Something about Fatal Attraction just really got to me subconsciously, and I cannot get past it, even though I know they're both fabulous actors. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy movies that they're in, and I enjoy them in the movies, but I will not go out of my way to watch a movie with either of them in it.
Who is that? Who's the wife in Fatal Attraction? Is it Ann Archer? I want to say it's Ann Archer, but I'm probably wrong. It's somebody else.
I don't recall.
I don't recall. Sorry.
Because I'm like doing, I just want to know if you feel the same way about that actress, but I don't know.
I think those are the two standouts for Sam. That's why it's something ingrained in him.
Yeah, there's very few actors that where I'm like, oh, I just don't want to see them. And there is those two are probably the very short list of actors I just really can't get excited about seeing.
Yeah, I can't really pinpoint it because I do have a similar thing with Glenn Close. But every time I see her, she's just fantastic. So,
You're going, why do I hate her?
Yeah, every time.
There's a list of three. Sigourney Weaver's another actress where I don't know why I don't like her, because she's phenomenal, but I don't like her.
Yeah, I took time out of my Defenders binging to watch this. Yeah. Speaking of Sigourney Weaver.
That's why I brought her up.
And I go out of my way for Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah. And I don't know why I don't like her, because I love the Alien films. I love her in everything I've ever seen her in, but just the thought of like going out of my way to see her movie with her in it just makes me just go, I'm just not interested.
I don't know. Everybody's got their favorites. Yeah. I mean, it's not like I dislike Glenn Close. It just, I don't know. It is one of those things I go out of my way to avoid.
People.
And then I'm like, why am I punishing myself? Because those movies are always good.
Wait, yeah.
What was the one usually good. Where there's the two guys who got like the government contract? Like they did a movie about it, the government contract it was the guy from Whiplash and Jonah Hill. Mm-hmm. And that was the one movie where both of those leads, those are two guys that I'm in the same boat with that, is like, I don't go out of my way to watch any movies with them.
Yeah, you take to certain actors and some you don't. Yeah. And that's okay. Everybody's got them. So.
Yeah. Yes, it's just weird because like I said, every time I see her on screen, I'm always in love with her performance.
Yeah. See, I love a delightful surprise. Maybe that's part of it. I don't mind it if I'm not going out of the way, but when I'm happily surprised and I'm like, I'm really enjoying this performance, it's kind of a nice feeling. You're like, okay, I got past my own crap and I'm enjoying this.
I think with Glenn Close, I think it was The Shield that kind of turned me around on my opinions of her. Because, and maybe it was Fatal Attraction, because her big square jaw just, there's something about it. And I'm like, why is she sexy? I don't know.
It's weird. And she isn't in Fatal Attraction. Like I kind of get it, because watching that movie, their two characters are terrible, terrible people.
Yeah. I mean, and maybe that's it. You believe in her, how horrible she is, that's all that's in your brain. Yeah. You've got used to hating her.
Yeah. And that might be it for.
And
yeah.
It's also because it can be so based in a realistic scenario that this could happen and these people could be like that. You can't help but get past, like, you can't help but associate that with that actor.
And yeah, and Michael Douglas says, I mean, because since we're talking about it, I mean, I love Romancing Stone.
I love that.
Jewel of the Nile. I love that really black comedy.
Where are the Roses.
Love that movie. I love The Game. I love Falling Down. So
Black Rain.
Yeah. So why do I cringe every time somebody says it's a Michael Douglas movie? I don't know. It has to be Fatal Attraction because they were so unlikable, both of them, in that movie, that I just never got over it.
Yeah, maybe that's the weird thing. Maybe that's the thing. You get to an actor, they've done such an absolutely amazing performance, you forever associate with them with an uncomfortable feeling.
Yeah,
I'm sure that's it, actually.
Well, psychology and a fun comparison.
There we go. We got deep with 101 Dalmatians. If you want to see us do another cartoon to live action remake, let us know what your favorites are. You can do that through all our social media or our email. We're on Twitter at Invasion Remake. We're on our Facebook. Go like our page on Facebook. It is Invasion of the Remake, of course, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com. You can send us those messages there as well.
Ooh, could I do not like so much where they fan challenge us? Can I challenge the fans for something that I think might be interesting? Can they think of one where they can reverse the process? Which live action movie do you think you could take, make it animated, and improve it?
Yeah, we might actually do that on the show if you got a good idea. You want us to do the reverse. I would really enjoy that.
That would be a lot of fun. Or take a cartoon that you'd like to see us remake as live action.
Yeah.
Because we've never done that either.
No, we haven't. So if you got some ideas, again, those places, at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook, and Invasion the Remake at gmail.com. Let us know. I like that idea. That is a great idea, Trish. Yeah, exactly. And Sam.
So fun.
Yeah.
I want to hear their ideas because.
And I would really like to do that. So.
Yeah, I'd like to do both of them. I think it was a great idea. I think Trish's idea is better than mine, but.
Oh, no.
I think they're both fabulous.
this will be fun. And it's just like, I'm sure that they've, like, our whole audience, between us and them, they've seen, like, such a myriad of films. There's got to be something that we haven't seen that would be brilliant to do either of these things to.
I think you're right.
Or even that we have seen that we just never really thought of. As a cartoon.
Cool idea. I'm on board for sure. Yeah. You can also help us help out the show. Tell your friends about the show. Tell them how to find the show. We're in a myriad of places. We're at Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, Player FM, TuneIn Radio, Blueberry, and Spreaker. We're also on frickin' YouTube. So tell all your friends where to find us and help us get more
earballs
on the show. It's back.
It's all coming back. Then maybe that should be the animated short that we should make. Earballs
the short. Totally fun. I would love to see that. You can also help us out by giving us a rating or a short review. You can do that on iTunes or the other places. Give us a 5-star rating and a short review and just tell other people about the show and helps them be informed to see if that's something they might like. And hopefully they do.
Yeah. And if they get on and like us and give us more ideas.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
We can use those.
Yeah. And of course, leave your comments on social media. Even if you just want to get into the conversation and continue the conversation about these movies, you can leave those comments in all those social media places and we'll engage you because, you know, we like to do that.
Yeah. And we love hearing about stuff that maybe we missed or we didn't know about a movie.
Yeah. We can only cover so much, especially when we're talking about multiple movies in an episode and we're not going to cover every point. So if there's other points you want to talk about, we will engage you about that on our social media.
Yeah.
Happily.
Absolutely. Happily.
We dug deep on this one psychologically, so maybe we might have missed some more Dalmatian-related stuff.
That's right. I mean, yeah. There's so much more in these movies, and every movie we cover, we can keep going on, but, you know, there's only so much time to pod. Yes. And the pod should never be longer than the movies themselves.
No, but sometimes it happens.
It does happen. It does happen. And I was very happy to do a Disney movie this week. We're going to keep the fun rolling next week. It won't be Disney, but it will be fun.
So excited.
Yeah, it should be an interesting one. It's going to be a challenge, that's for sure.
Yes, it is.
A delightful challenge.
You know what's funny, though? I have to say this, because when you told us about this, Jay, you immediately followed up with, but it's not on Netflix anymore. You're making it very hard for those of us who don't own the DVD copy that you have to watch this.
Well, go downtown.
we'll find something.
It's not expensive.
No. But I just thought it was funny that you're like, yeah, we're doing this next week. By the way, it's not on Netflix anymore.
Oh, well, it was, and that's why I did check it last night. But I'm like, screw it. We're still doing it.
To be fair, he did use the word challenge.
Yes.
So. Yes. It's you can find it on iTunes. It's fine. Yeah. I mean, it's a foreign film with a wide release.
It's got to be somewhere, yeah.
So that's the only hint I'm giving you guys.
Until the teaser goes out a couple of days before the air.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll see the teaser a couple of days and you might get it, you might not. I don't know. But until then, I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
I will continue to be Trish.
And I'm going to go find some Dalmatians to pet. They're beautiful animals.
Cuddle them.
That's right. All right. Aww. We are out of here.
Them to the other puppies we've already stolen, and I have my cozy puppy coat. I'll be wearing Anita's dogs.